happens. Thousands of animals have died, though no one knows how many really. Hundreds of miles of Alaskan beaches are suffocating in oil, and there are thousands more that no one's surveyed yet. Every day, one rescue specialist said, every day it gets a little worse. In Prince William Sound today, oil crews finished pumping out the Exxon Valdez. The crude oil was transferred to smaller tankers. The ruptured supertanker itself is scheduled for repairs at dry dock in Portland, Oregon, though officials there are not so sure they want to accept it.
Since the rocks of Bligh Reef ripped open the hull of the tanker 11 days ago, the ship's namesake, the town of Valdez, has been catapulted to international prominence. Valdez is a small port, surrounded by mountains, a town first developed as a fishing port, but utterly transformed, first when it was chosen as the southern terminus of the Alaska pipeline, now again by an environmental disaster. And NPR's Daniel Zwerdling reports that both set off economic booms.
The town of Valdez, population 3,000, is accustomed to booms. There was the copper boom that helped build the town in the early 1900s, then the boom rebuilding the town after the 64 earthquake destroyed it, then the boom when they built the pipeline to pump oil, and now the boom cleaning up the oil. Before the Exxon Valdez tanker ruptured, the tiny airport here seemed dead. It never had more than a few flights a day. Now there are 500 flights a day. There are clumps of urgent-looking men everywhere wearing orange flight suits and beards.
A lot of rock, a lot of small beaches, a lot of cobbly beaches, some sand beaches, real mixture.
The town's telephone circuits have been so overwhelmed that it's sometimes hard to call in or out of town.
We're sorry. All circuits are busy now. Will you please try your call again later?
The waitresses in town are working double shifts. The hotels, which are mostly empty this time of year, are completely booked, and they have huge waiting lists. In fact, my producer and I pay a single mother $40 apiece to rent two of the three bedrooms in her home.
Some people charge $75 for a couch only.
Okay, now I have to say that in order to rent us these two rooms, you have kicked your two teenage sons out of their bedrooms, yes?
Yes. One is sleeping in the couch, the other one is sleeping in my bed, and without mattress.
At the Sugar and Spice gift shop, they're doing great business selling commemorative whale spill t-shirts and caps. It took them only 3 days to get the designs from Anchorage, about the same time it took Exxon to start cleaning up.
They've been selling like hotcakes. We can't keep them in stock. This one says on the rocks, Valdez, Alaska. Pretty much self-explanatory.
Okay, and it has a picture of a black tanker with a lot of black goo around it.
And maybe it should be in a big martini glass, too. We don't know. This is another one. This has been our biggest seller. It's a map of the Prince William Sound with a large black oil spill.
And right in the middle of it, like somebody spilled some ink on it.
We didn't want to get too offensive because a lot of the trade in this store comes from the tanker, the people right off the tankers. And the oil companies have always been, you know, real good to us here, their trade.
Oil spill command teams have virtually seized the state office building, and normal work has come to a halt. Just walk into room 54 of the state courtroom, and you won't find the judge or jurors anymore.
All three of these bands.
Okay, and you're saying, Jerry, that the general current comes up like this, and right. He basically hugs the coast,
there's
contours
really,
the coast.
The Cordova Fishermen's Union has taken over. They call it their war room. One man with a reddish-orange beard is leaning back in the judge's chair. He's talking on the phone.
Talking with Exxon here, and they're trying to figure out how much boom we need, where, how we can get it there, how we can get it up to the airport. Yeah, back at you.
The judge's bench, as they call it, is littered with food, open jars of peanut butter and wheat thins, carrots and juice. The courtroom walls are covered with navigation charts. They're all streaked with yellow and red crayon, like a TV weather map, showing where the oil's been spotted latest. Colored pins mark where fishermen are trying to protect hatcheries by stringing oil-absorbent boom. Almost 150 private fishing boats have joined what the union calls the mosquito fleet.
That Navy boom. We'll get the sky crane standing by, and all right, thank you. We'll see you, Craig.
There are all types of oil spill command centers around town. The Coast Guard has one. The animal rescue people have taken over an entire building at the community college. The National Oceanographic and Atmospheric Administration, which makes oil flow maps on two personal computers, has staked out a room off the lobby of the town's biggest hotel. And Exxon has set up a few command centers, one of them in a tour boat office overlooking the harbor. They've got armed security guards to get rid of visitors.
Excuse me.
You're not allowed in here, please.
Sir, will you get your hand off me and I'll leave.
Okay,
don't push me.
Actually, it's harder to talk to Exxon staff than just about anybody else in town. Company executives had been holding daily press conferences at the town civic center, which were packed by both journalists and hostile townspeople. But then a few days ago, the press conference degenerated into a shouting match. It all happened when a woman carrying an ominous-looking bag threatened to dump a dead sea otter at the feet of Exxon executives. And guards stopped and questioned her, and someone began yelling something about trampling First Amendment rights.
Our First Amendment rights to ask questions are being abridged.
It turned out the woman's bag was full of laundry, not dead animals. But by then, things were out of control, and Exxon executives walked out. And they said from now on, only journalists, no townspeople, could attend these sessions anymore. Later, the governor would call this incident not worthy of Alaskans. All this has been hard for some Valdezians to swallow. The people in this town have worked hard for Exxon and for the oil industry. And in return, oil money has been good to them. This small community, population only 3,000, gets $30 million a year from the oil pipeline's property tax. Thanks to oil, the Valdez government has a bigger budget than Fairbanks, even though Fairbanks has 15 times as many people. As David Hammack says, he's chairman of the local economic development committee, what other town of 3,000 people has a free, gleaming, government-owned racquetball court?
Valdez probably has more linear feet of poured concrete per capita than any community in Alaska. We're standing in front of the new elementary school that has a hydrotherapy pool, has the racquetball courts that are open to the public. We have an $8 million civic and convention center. We have a $100 million dock complex that's hardly used. The largest floating concrete dock in the world, grain terminals that haven't seen any grain. We have a city hall, a senior center, a teen center. We have a library, museum, all of which are facilities that you would expect to find in the lower 48 in a community of 100 or 200,000 people.
So people here like the oil companies and oil.
We have enjoyed, as Alaskans, a remarkably high standard of living made possible only by oil revenue. And right now, we have to question whether it was worth it.
The people who could lose the most from Exxon's oil spill are the fishermen. On Monday, state officials announced they're banning the season's herring fishing because of the spill. And according to industry estimates, the herring catch was going to make $10 to $20 million this year. So far, though, federal researchers believe the oil is just missing the most important fishing areas. So they say it's true. This is a terrible spill. It's one of the worst in history. But they say there is a good chance that the oil will not cause serious long-term ecological damage to the fishing industry. Still, salmon fishers like Doris Lopez are nervous, obviously. Lopez lives in a trailer behind a black, battered pickup truck. When I stop by, she's changing her baby's diapers.
Even if testing is done that proves that the fish are not dangerous to sell, the PR will be used by the buyers to lower the price. And our processors have gotten a number of calls from their buyers, especially the Japanese buyers, saying if there's any contamination at all, we aren't interested. And obviously, because the reputation has gone down, we don't want to pay as much for the fish. What might have been a 45 cent a pound fish to us before could be down to a 15 cent per pound fish.
Of course, no disaster would be complete without lawyers. And Lopez and other fishermen say they're being hassled by lawyers.
They called this morning. I received two phone calls. It was an attorney's office, and I didn't pay attention to the name. My phone has rung off the wall, and they just said that they were calling the fishermen to let us know that they're interested in representing us. They realize that we're going to have a major claim, and they're in Anchorage, and that they're available, and please write their name down and call them if we're interested, which I didn't do.
Are you going to sue, or are you feeling pressured to make up your mind right away?
It's been stated by Exxon, and the governor mentioned today, too, you know, you don't need to get a lawyer. They've said, don't bother going and using your money to get a lawyer. Just come in and make your claim with reasonable evidence, and we'll be glad to settle with you. I think that people are feeling a panic. People are so anxious right now about how they're going to pay their bills this summer that they'll end up settling for a lot less than they could ultimately get.
You'd think this massive oil spill would be good for unemployed workers around town. Researchers are saying it's going to take months to clean up, but 600 people have applied for cleanup jobs at the local unemployment office. Some of them have come from hundreds of miles away, and few have been hired.
Would you like a phone number on this list?
That would be convenient.
Are you looking for a job this morning?
Exactly. The oil spill cleanup?
Uh-huh.
Yesterday I heard on the news broadcast they're hiring 1,000 men. And so far, been here 3 days waiting to get out.
You've been here 3 days looking for a job on the oil spill cleanup?
Exactly.
And what are they telling you?
They're not telling us nothing. Not telling us a darn thing. They're telling us to sign our name up. I've signed my name here more times than Bayer's got aspirin.
Exxon insists they've hired 300 local people to help clean up the spill, although the company doesn't give details about who they are or where they found them. And the issue has been causing tensions in town, partly because Exxon contractors have been flying cleanup workers to Valdez from as far away as New Orleans. Local residents like Dave Janka, who worked on cleanup crews during the first few days and who lives on the Sound, miles from town, say it's hard for outsiders to really understand how the Exxon spill is affecting them.
It has been our dream to live in Prince William Sound, and it's like our front yard. It affects us very closely. When I went crewing on one of the boats that had been hired on for cleanup, and we first moved into the oil, the thickness and the vapors, especially near the tanker, were, 11 million gallons on the radio. Hearing that could not describe to me just the actually being in it was just overwhelming. As the boat would move through it slowly, it would, it's so thick that it would just bunch up next to the hull, and it was so thick that you'd have to come very close to just a small lump in the oil, and you'd have to, just guess whether that was a bird or what it might be. It was just so thick. Right now, it has reminded me of deaths I have experienced. It's like a funeral in the wake and everything else happening. I mean, now things are starting to, just to be able to balance the emotions. There's the little jokes. You'd have some, tanker captain joke, and you'd laugh about that or something, but then, an hour later, you're crying.
Tanker captain joke?
Oh, something along the lines of the tanker captain coming up to the bridge and saying, I said, tanker ray on the rocks, not tanker on the rocks. Or things like a new drink in town, an Exxon special, which is anything on the rocks.
In the parking lot behind the state office building, just down the road from the district attorney's space, they've set up an impromptu morgue for oily animals picked up in Prince William Sound. Tony DeGanch, with the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, is heaving black plastic garbage bags filled with dead birds and sea otters into a freezer truck.
They're pretty heavy. Some of these otters can be up to 100 pounds, these males, so they're pretty hefty.
And what's the purpose of keeping them all in this truck?
From what I've been told, is to use, so they'll eventually be used in evidence. The state of Alaska will sue Exxon, I presume, and it'll be used as evidence. One of the things that I want to do with, as a federal employee, a biologist, is take certain specimens from these otters. So
eventually a lot of these animals will be autopsied?
Ideally I'd like to have a veterinary pathologist do complete workups on all of them, but again, the state wants them as evidence, and we're trying to work out some of the hassles with who wants what from each animal. And there's some little competition.
Wait, so there's a competition for body
well,
parts?
Well, I shouldn't have said that. We want something from them, the state wants something from them, and we're trying to work out who gets what.
Here and there around Valdez these days, people are tacking photocopies of a calendar on their bulletin boards. Almost nobody has the original. It's become sort of a collector's item. But the photocopies are of the March page from the Exxon Shipping Company calendar. And at the top of the page, there's a big close-up picture of the tanker Exxon Valdez. And then in big letters, the slogan says, "Take time to be careful. Now." I'm Daniel Zwerdling in Valdez, Alaska.
Last week we called a salmon hatchery in Port San Juan, an island in the Prince William Sound. At that time, the oil spill was still 12 to 15 miles away. Today, hatchery manager Eric Prestigard says the major part of the spill is now upon them.
There's a small amount of oil on the booms now, very small, but the oil is just right out in front. We're dragging it out to sucker pumps. We're diverting it with small diversion booms, and we're trying to kind of keep our head above water until this large ocean curtain arrives tomorrow morning, which we hope to deploy as a major deflector.
You mentioned an ocean curtain. What is that?
That's a real large ocean boom. It'll have somewhere between a 42 to 51 inch skirt and about a 36 inch diameter float on top. It's real large stuff, very strong. It's a containment boom just like all the rest of them, except that it's extremely large and should be more effective dealing in these waters with the heavy tides.
Now, the oil you say is right out in front of you. You're actually looking at miles of oil.
Yeah, that's correct. Yes, and it's an awful scary sight. We're fighting, kicking, and screaming.
You've got a little bit on the booms now.
That's correct, and actually we even have a little bit on, it's come underneath our first defense boom and is on our secondary boom.
How does it go underneath? Is that a normal thing?
We're starting to see that, yeah, there's so much oil that some of it sinks and resurfaces, and the wind, the currents, boat chop, boat wake, everything can cause it to do different things. It's a real education.
How long do you figure it will take, given the weather that you have now, for the oil to pass?
Boy, it's been going by. It's been on top of us now for all 3 days, just right out in front. And up north, there's still a tremendous amount of oil coming our way. So I figure of there may be somewhere between 40 and 60% of the oil yet to pass.
So could that be a week, possibly?
Yes, that could easily be a week. That's just the heart of the oil. Then there's going to be, the stuff coming off the beaches for some time to come. This is a big fight, a long fight.
Now, I've heard this, that if the oil starts coming over the booms, there's a way that the ships can come in there and, suck up in tubes the small fish that you have hatching there?
As an extremely last-ditch effort, we have a transfer vessel lined up with transfer tanks to transfer the fry out of San Juan, probably to our hatchery to the north, our Esther Island hatchery. But again, that is extremely last ditch, and the only reason we would do that is that if the fry are just threatened that they will die, and then we would do that just because we will not allow them to die. But it's really not a very good option.
Do you have a dollar figure on the potential value of the salmon fry in your hatchery?
As an example, now last year was an unusual year for several reasons, but our fish were worth about $18 million, and we figure that they should easily be worth something like $12 to $15 million this year. So that's a fair chunk of change.
Yeah. Why couldn't you do this just hypothetically? You could just close up the effort and say, that's $18 million that Exxon owes us, and go to Hawaii and take a couple of weeks off.
No way. No way. We're dedicated fish farmers and fishermen out here, and we've worked too hard for these fish, and this is our life. So no, vacation's not the answer.
Talking with us in Port San Juan, Alaska, Eric Prestigard. He manages the Armin Koenig Salmon Hatchery in Prince William Sound. Dennis Kelso is Commissioner of Alaska's Department of Environmental Conservation. He sees the President's direction today as consistent with his department's efforts to involve the Coast Guard in the cleanup.
What we wanted was a strong role for the Coast Guard in managing the cleanup operations in the field. They have the command structure to get that done, and Exxon was having management problems and just wasn't able to field the kind of response that they needed. So what the President's direction says to us is that The Coast Guard will have that role. We think that Exxon should stay in the picture, and if the president's program is what we think it means, we're going to have the kind of support that we need to finally turn this corner.
Mr. Kelso, a skeptic looking at this could say that even though President Bush said the ultimate goal must be complete restoration of the ecology and economy of Prince William Sound, all he really is offering here is a bit of management advice by having the Coast Guard take over parts of the operation. Wouldn't you rather have had the president say, this is a total disaster and we'll commit every resource we have, including lots of federal money, to help to clean it up?
There's no doubt that we're looking at serious damage, and we're looking at damage for years to come. This is a genuine tragedy for the people who live here, and they know that no matter what the resources are for cleanup, they're going to suffer the consequences for a long time. And we believe that it is appropriate for the federal government to give it the kind of financial support necessary so that in addition to the ecological damage, we don't make the human costs any greater than absolutely necessary.
Governor Steve Cooper has said this past week or so that he's threatened, in fact, to stop the flow of oil from the pipeline or to stop the tanker traffic coming out of Port Valdez unless new contingency plans are in place and are deemed to be effective. How are things going about that?
Today I will sign an emergency order imposing additional conditions on the Alyeska Pipeline Service Company, and those conditions are intended to give Alaskans and everyone else assurance that oil moving from the pipeline terminal at Valdez is going to move safely. Now, for the longer term, I think we need to look at the whole system. This is not just a matter of one tanker going off course and going aground. This is the result of an overall system of moving oil from Alaska's North Slope to markets in the contiguous 48 states.
I think you're in opposition to President Bush about one point here. He said today, he asked this question, are you suggesting that because of the alleged human error of the pilot of a ship in Prince William Sound that we shut down all the offshore production? If so, I oppose that. And you're saying that indeed the total picture needs to be examined.
I think the total picture needs to be examined. I don't think that necessarily means an immediate shutdown, but let's look at contingency plans and see whether that really is the best way to do business. Let's look at tanker design. Let's look at traffic control. These things shouldn't depend on any individual captain or any other individual in this whole machine of moving oil to market. And it's time that we set aside our assumptions and really look at this machinery and decide what works and what doesn't, and then let's fix it.
Talking with us from Valdez, Alaska, Dennis Kelso, Commissioner of the State's Department of Environmental Conservation.
First, to Alaska. A Pentagon team is there this weekend to make recommendations on the military support needed for the cleanup of the oil spill off the state's coast. President Bush announced the expanded federal role on Friday. More than 10 million gallons of oil spilled from the Exxon Valdez after it ran aground in Prince William Sound 16 days ago. NPR's Daniel Zwerdling was in Valdez to cover the story. He joins us with his reporter's notebook. Danny, you were able to fly over Prince William Sound. What did you see?
Well, first of all, I saw spectacular beauty. It is one of the most spectacular wonderlands, really, although it's a cliched word, of mountains and water I have ever seen. Second of all, I was struck by the vastness of Prince William Sound. It's huge. We flew in a plane for more than an hour south down the sound, and we still had plenty of sound left to go, and we hadn't even come to the end of it. The other thing that really surprised me was how mercurial the oil has been in what it has hit. We flew for miles and miles, seeing no oil at all. I mean, it looked like the pristine sound everybody says it had been before the spill. Then suddenly we would come upon an island. The first two inlets in the island looked totally pristine again, totally beautiful, no oil. Then the third and fourth bays or inlets were clogged with oil, like tar pits. The oil has been quite undemocratic in what it has assaulted and gunked up.
Well, given the undemocratic nature of this oil spill, how can one then assess the damage that's going to cause to the sound?
That's very difficult, and reporting that was very difficult. I found it rather hard to try to get the right balance between possible extremes, between on the one hand saying, as a lot of media have done, that this has been a complete, utter ecological disaster, which it has not been, and I'm going to explain that in a moment. But on the other hand, not saying it's not that big a deal, because it is a big deal. And I think the way to understand that is this oil spill is causing two levels of damage. The first is short-term damage. In the short term, there is no question that this is a disaster. First of all, to the fishing industry, millions of dollars worth of fish will be lost this year. Second of all, the environment, I mean, has been completely despoiled this year. I mean, it looks hideous where the oil has hit. Third, thousands of people's lives have been completely disrupted, and there will be incalculable millions spent by the government, by private citizens, by all sorts of organizations fighting and cleaning up this spill. That is a disaster, there's no question about it. But the second question is, what is the long-term damage to the Prince William Sound? That is a much more difficult question, and I think a lot of people are somewhat shocked to hear that researchers, many researchers, feel pretty sure that there will probably not be serious long-term ecological damage to the Sound. Studies of major oil spills around the world have shown that bodies of water bounce back pretty quickly, surprisingly, to oil spills, so that although this year, maybe next year, the fish will be, be contaminated, over the long term, the Sound will bounce back. The fishing industry will probably be pretty healthy. Even though thousands of animals are dying this year, their populations will bounce back pretty fast, too. So short-term disaster, yes. Long-term ecological disaster, probably not. People, as I say, are surprised by this. I got a letter just the other day from somebody who was very upset, who said she was upset at my blithely upbeat assessment of the Valdez oil spill. I'm quoting her. She said, as I listen to and read subsequent accounts of the devastation to incalculable numbers of birds, fish, and mammals, one question preys in my mind. How could you have been so thoroughly co-opted? And I think what's in her tone there is the surprise at some of the reports where I talked to the researchers who said, over the long term, this is not going to be an ecological disaster, we think.
Danny, you use words like could be, might be, probably. I mean, is this going to turn into this long-term research experiment?
Yes, because every oil spill really is, in a way, a new research experiment all over again. The way that oil affects an environment depends on the kind of oil it is, the kind of waters it's in, whether they're hit a lot by waves and wind or whether they're sheltered in coves. The temperature of the waters, all these things affect very differently the long-term as well as the short-term effects of the oil. So although I stress that researchers feel pretty confident that this is not going to cause a long-term ecological disaster, they don't know for sure, and it will be years, really, before people know exactly how this oil spill from the tanker Exxon Valdez has affected Prince William Sound.
Thanks very much. NPR's Daniel Zwerdling.
Thank you, Leanne.
Some high winds have blown parts of the oil slick out of Prince William Sound and out into the Gulf of Alaska this week. Patches of crude oil are reported heading toward Seward and Kodiak, and people there are preparing the same kind of defense already used in parts of Prince William Sound. Heavy booms strung across the entrances to inlets and harbors to block or divert the oil. More heavy weather could help disperse the slick, but there's still a threat of new damage to previously untouched areas. Since the oil first leaked from the Exxon Valdez, we've checked in from time to time with Eric Prestigard, the manager of a salmon hatchery in Prince William Sound. Today, he tells us they're almost finished putting a heavy ocean deflector boom in place that should protect against oil, even if there are strong onshore winds driving it.
The Coast Guard vessel Ironwood and several of the fishermen are re-anchoring it with proper anchors that we got out of Cordova yesterday. And so they're finalizing it now and getting it straighter and whatnot to deflect the oil. It has proved itself earlier in the week. We did Monday and Tuesday get quite a batch of oil going by. And it wasn't properly anchored, but it did work. And so now this will really help.
It just sort of nudged the oil on off into the water?
Yeah, it comes down from the north, and it just what this does is just deflect it on an angle back out of the bay on the other entrance. We kind of have two entrances, and it just keeps it going south and misses the bay. When it's in permanently, it'll work real well.
It's been a few days since we talked with you. Have you had any oil actually to get in and affect your hatchery there?
No, we haven't. We've
we've had oil against the deflection boom and oil against our main defense boom. So it's there, but it has not broken the barrier.
How much more oil could possibly come up to your barrier?
We're trying to get estimates now of how much was left up above. I do feel that a major portion has gone by of the heavy crude, but there's going to be sheen oil coming down for some time to come because there's still a lot of bays and a lot of beaches that are either the bays full of oil or the beaches have a lot of oil on it. And until it's cleaned up or washed out, it'll be coming our way.
Is it possible, do you think, Eric, that in the future, let's say 3 weeks from now, that one of those little bays or inlets could release some oil that would be enough to come into your hatchery if you didn't protect it that would affect your fish?
Yes, definitely. The bay on the north end of our island, just north of here, a few miles, Shelter Bay, it's just plugged with oil right now. And you bet, that's a lot of oil. That bay's bigger than our bay, and it's plugged with oil, so you bet. I personally think at this time there's enough oil up there that we'll be in danger for some time to come.
So you've got at least a whole summer kind of watching out for things.
Right now, that's kind of our thinking, although that's subject to change.
Have blown parts of the oil slick out of Prince William Sound and out into the Gulf of Alaska this week. Patches of crude oil are reported heading toward Seward and Kodiak, and people there are preparing the same kind of defense already used in parts of Prince William Sound, heavy booms strung across the entrances to inlets and harbors to block or divert the oil. More heavy weather could help disperse the slick, but there's still a threat of new damage to previously untouched areas. Since the oil first leaked from the Exxon Valdez, we've checked in from time to time with Eric Prestigard, the manager of a salmon hatchery in Prince William Sound. Today, he tells us they're almost finished putting a heavy ocean deflector boom in place that should protect against oil, even if there are strong onshore winds driving it.
The Coast Guard vessel Ironwood and several of the fishermen are re-anchoring it with proper anchors that we got out of Cordova yesterday. And so they're finalizing it now and getting it straighter and whatnot to deflect the oil. It has proved itself. Earlier in the week, we did Monday and Tuesday get quite a batch of oil going by. It wasn't properly anchored, but it did work. And so now this will really help.
It just sort of nudged the oil on off into the water?
Yeah, it comes down from the north, and it just what this does is just deflect it on an angle back out of the bay on the other entrance. We kind of have two entrances. And it just keeps it going south and misses the bay. When it's in permanently, it'll work real well.
It's been a few days since we talked with you. Have you had any oil actually to get in and affect your hatchery there?
No, we haven't. We've had oil against the deflection boom and oil against our main defense boom. So it's there, but it has not broken the barrier.
How much more oil could possibly come up to your barrier?
We're trying to get estimates now of how much was left up above. I do feel that a major portion has gone by of the heavy crude, but there's going to be sheen oil coming down for some time to come because there's still a lot of bays and a lot of beaches that are either the bays full of oil or the beaches have a lot of oil on it. And until it's cleaned up or washed out, it'll be coming our way.
Is it possible, do you think, Eric, that in the future, let's say 3 weeks from now, that one of those little bays or inlets could release some oil that would be enough to come into your hatchery if you didn't protect it that would affect your fish?
Yes, definitely. The bay on the north end of our island, just north of here, a few miles, Shelter Bay, it's just plugged with oil right now. And you bet, that's a lot of oil. That bay's bigger than our bay, and it's plugged with oil, so you bet. I personally think at this time there's enough oil up there that we'll be in danger for some time to come.
So you've got at least a whole summer kind of watching out for things.
Right now, that's kind of our thinking, although that's subject to change as we see what progresses. nobody fully understands, I think, or at least in my mind, I don't fully understand all the implications. So it'll be some time figuring all this out. We're planning on just being ready for oil through the summer.
Did you have a moment, let's say, the latter part of last week when you broke out the champagne and said, well, we think we've got it beaten for a while?
Well, no, we haven't had that yet. We'd love to, but it's still fight here. I think everybody's getting ready for that, and that's going to happen, probably have to happen pretty soon. Everybody's getting pretty tired.
Eric Prestigard, manager of a salmon hatchery at Port San Juan, Prince William Sound, Alaska. About 3,000 birds have already been killed by the oil spill in Alaska. About 15 million more are expected to migrate to Prince William Sound soon. The U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service says it will send crews out to make loud noises to scare the birds away from oily beaches that were once the prime nesting areas. And in a few months, the salmon from out in the Gulf of Alaska will return to the sound to spawn. As those salmon are caught by fishermen, they'll be checked for oil on a daily basis. And late Sunday evening, hatcheries in the area felt confident enough in the conditions in the water to begin releasing millions of tiny salmon fry to become next summer's catch. Since the oil spill, we've spoken often with Eric Prestigard, who manages one of the hatcheries. He expects that by the end of May, he will have released about 160 million fry.
We put out 7 million last night.
What time?
About 10 o'clock.
Pretty exciting for you?
It's always good to get rid of them, that's for sure. Yeah, kind of our favorite part.
What, do you open the gates and wish them good luck?
Yeah, we drop the net pin down and, kind of pull it up on the other side. And, yeah, hope all goes well for them and keep an eye on them. It's real windy today, so we can't really get a good view of where they've dispersed to yet, but we'll keep looking.
Why did you let them out at night?
Less predation. Birds and some of the other fish will move in on them, especially they're somewhat disoriented when they first leave the net pin, and as they disperse, they'll be on the surface. So they'll get quite a predation take place. So we feel at night it gives them, at least 6 hours, 8 hours of darkness to get their bearings.
Now, the fry, the baby salmon, are how big at this point?
They're about a third of a gram. So they're very small, about an inch and a quarter long.
So about half of my little finger.
Right, yeah. So they're kind of a real bite-sized morsel.
Okay, and how fast do they grow up out there in the Sound?
Well, from now, they'll be out there about a year and 2-3 months. So it's about 15 months they'll come back as about 3.5-pound fish.
So the harvest is next summer for these fish?
Right, yeah. Not this summer, but the summer of 90.
Remind us, if you had a normal summer in terms of releasing the fry for next year's catch, how much money would that be, sort of in grand retail terms?
Probably somewhere in the neighborhood of $12 to $18 million.
Yeah. So you feel pretty good about actually going ahead with some part of your program?
You bet. There's been a lot of data, initial data coming back in from different research groups, and what they found right now, everything appears to be the best that we can hope for. Also, there's a fairly large zooplankton bloom taking place. That's their primary feeding source, so we feel that it's the best time. I mean, get them out there when there's their natural food in abundance.
Yeah.
You know, keep them as healthy as possible to try to get through the oil that's still out there.
What about the oil in the water now? How much of an effect will it have? Is it dangerous at all for them, do you think?
Indications are right now, maybe not. They found fry up in several bays up north that were the surface was coated with oil, but the fry down below the oil appeared to be fine and healthy. So we'll see what happens. Maybe the salmon will be the one area that will not be extremely affected at this point, but again, it's early.
Eric Prestigard, manager of the Armand Koenig Hatchery on Prince William Sound.